When called for a hospital consult, dermatologists provide invaluable insight into the diagnosis and management of medical conditions with cutaneous involvement. Inpatient dermatology and emergency dermatologic care has become the primary focus of a new breed of dermatologists called dermatology hospitalists. In our last dialogue this month, we joined Dr. Daniela Krasinski and Dr. Stuart Brown, who will bring us an update on the rise of dermatology hospitalists.
Hello there. This is Stuart Brown, and I'm having a delightful visit today with Dr. Daniela Krasinski. Dr. Krasinski is Assistant Professor of Dermatology at Massachusetts General Hospital at Harvard Medical School and Director of Inpatient Dermatology Education and Research also at MGH. And with that background, we're going to discuss hospitalists. And we now have dermatologic hospitalists, and I think they are significantly contributing to our knowledge and our ability to care for people. Daniela, what in your concept is hospitalist dermatology?
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here to speak about this. We think it's a really important part of what we have to offer as dermatologists. Hospitalist dermatology refers to the concept of a provider in dermatology who assumes care of patients who are either hospitalized or presenting to the emergency room, and we spend the majority of our time managing those individuals and developing an expertise and a niche, so to speak, about how to best provide care, how to educate our colleagues, and how to improve hospital outcomes around those conditions that most commonly come up in the emergency room and in the inpatient setting. I think one of the other nice things is that although we may all be familiar with the conditions and recognizing them, having a significant amount of time in the hospital managing a greater proportion of these patients allows you to really gain an expertise in treating these conditions and in staying up to date in the therapeutic options that we have available. It also really allows you to form collaborative relationships with the other departments and really get involved in research, in educating their residents, and again, looking forward in terms of reintegrating our specialty to the rest of the medical community.
So there's so many things that the general dermatologist is unfamiliar with. Although we may do a lot of PD derm, we're not familiar with the neonatal ICU, and that's what the pediatric dermatologist offers us. And the same thing with hospitals. We may make occasional hospital consults, but the familiarity within the venue of a hospital falls upon you guys.
Well, there's certainly an efficiency aspect to it, and I think that's where the whole concept of the hospitalist emerged really in the mid-90s. It was a term that was coined in the New England Journal in 1996 as referring to the physician who took over for the community doctor when a patient was admitted so that they could really dedicate their time to following their course of care and to managing patients in a more efficient manner. But you do gain a certain sense of understanding about the workings of the hospital, resources that are available, you develop your contacts. And I think it allows you to respond to things quickly, but also to respond to them in a way that's very, very efficient. And other teams and providers who call us appreciate that. We hear it over and over again. We're so glad you came. You came so quickly. And I think that means a great deal.
I guess the New England Journal is sort of the MGH family newspaper.
Sort of, like, yes. It's interesting because we are in this great position where a number of our cases then get featured as case records of the MGH, as a feature in the journal. And I've been tracking over time what has happened with those as we've converted from a multi-person sort of model where people popped in and out to cover consults to really a very limited provider continuity of care experience where now there's only two of us for the most part who spend the majority of our time doing that. And while the number of cases that are featured in the CPC reports have stayed the same, the number of dermatology cases that are featured have gone up. And more importantly, the number of those cases where the dermatologist is actually the primary discussant has gone up drastically. In the past, a number of those reports really featured the rheumatologist or the infectious disease doctor or an internist really presenting and discussing the dermatologic findings, even though they were predominantly a dermatology case. And one of the nice things I think about now having seen this model develop and become successful is actually seeing that dermatologists are now featured more prominently as the experts in presenting and discussing these cases as well.
Over the years, I felt it incumbent upon all dermatologists to show other specialties that we know something beyond how to pick a pimple, and we relate to every specialty in our knowledge of that which borders on dermatology or involves the skin. And you all and the hospitalists offer even greater rapport with the other specialties to show them we have a lot to offer them. And it does help the patient in the long run.
It's been a wonderful opportunity, I think a really enjoyable part. I think it's very gratifying to form relationships with other physicians and other departments, and those relationships have then translated into great opportunities to further understanding of diseases and ultimately our own field. I can say that because we work with the same individuals over and over again, we've been able to move forward with clinical research in calciphylaxis, in cellulitis, in Stevens-Johnson's TEN, even delusions of parasitosis. Does show up in the hospital every now and again. Drug reactions due to important medications for the hepatologist, where individuals really need to stay on those medications. And working with a dermatologist can help facilitate that a patient can complete a course of a really necessary medication. All of those things, I think, have really come out of being visible and being available and getting to know people as a result of that.
Do your SJS and TEN patients go to the burn unit, or are they in your purview?
We do have a burn unit, both pediatric and adult, and so we are called to consult for those individuals that come in, but they reside in the burn unit.
But yet you help control them.
We do. You never know what you're going to see. You never know what you'll get called in for. And then as we're starting to do research, analyzing what it is actually that we are called to see and what we contribute to in terms of scope of disease, very often what we're called for is not ultimately what we end up seeing. And so you truly don't know until you walk through the door what you're going to be working with, and every day is different. So it certainly never gets boring.
That's a wonderful feeling of any specialty or anybody in medicine, is the exciting portion of, okay, what is next? We talked a bit about the advantages and the things that we offer. What are some of the disadvantages of being a hospitalist?
Disadvantages. Well, I'd have to say I don't have the same type of control over my schedule as some of my colleagues might, because you never know what's going to come in. You never know when you're going to finish necessarily, and we have it set up at our institution that we have a fixed time frame in which daytime consults are called in, and then after that point it switches over to the on-call team. But you could get called at 4:59 with something really acute and time intensive and labor intensive, and so you do, I think, by transitioning back into the hospital, start to acquire more of a hospital-based lifestyle. But again, like anything, there's trade-offs, and I think the benefits certainly outweigh the downsides for me.
And that 4:59 is on a Friday afternoon, too.
Usually, holiday weekend, something like that. Right.
We alluded to earlier the advantages and how we can offer greater care for more serious or protracted disorders. Are there any other greater impacted areas that we may talk about?
Certainly. So one of the, I think, greatest advantages to having a dermatology hospitalist affiliated with an institution is that we really can impact outcomes and efficiency measures for the hospital, not only just personally being more efficient in care of an individual, but being able to identify conditions where patients may not have needed to be admitted or could be more effectively managed in the outpatient setting. Certainly, we see a number of cases come into the emergency room where perhaps there was an access or insurance issue that led the patient to come in, but being able to quickly see those individuals and set up follow-up care and a plan of action. think certainly can help to improve workflow in the emergency department. They're always grateful to us for that. But in addition, in one of the areas of interest that I've always had is cellulitis. I found that a lot of my research comes out of areas of frustration generated through my work in the inpatient service, and the number of cellulitis unresponsive to vancomycin consults that I've gotten, or bilateral cellulitis unresponsive.
Or what may not even be cellulitis.
Well, and that's exactly the point. And so having looked at this issue retrospectively and now prospectively, it's, you know, anywhere between 70 to 85% of cases ultimately end up not being cellulitis when we are called. And so being able to identify the appropriate diagnosis and treat the individual is hugely gratifying, and I think it's certainly a bonus for a hospital, especially with cellulitis being such a common reason for admission. But there are certainly other examples, many, many examples that you can think of, particularly with some of the neutrophilic dermatoses where patients undergo surgery and debridement over sometimes more than a year at a time, and the cost and the expense and the morbidity and the detriment to the patient, I think, you know, cannot be underscored enough, and I think all dermatologists are aware of that. But having a presence, I think, facilitates people to actually call you for sort of a second opinion of sorts, to be able to intervene and identify those cases in a more timely manner. But as a group, we're going to be looking quite a bit at how we influence hospital outcomes and costs in terms of really being much more cost effective if you have someone available who can intervene in these cases, as we're getting into readmission sort of issues with hospitals and patients being readmitted for the same diagnosis, when really we can help with a lot of those issues.
When there's a dermatologic problem in the ER, is the resident on call contacted, or do they contact you, or the resident on call then contact you if there's a greater problem?
So between 8 and 5 is when our consult service officially accepts consults, and then from 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. it's the on-call team. And so if a call comes in that window of time, then the resident receives the call, sees the patient, sort of triages it, and then gets in touch with us, and we are able to then make a decision, come and see the patient. We try our best really to get there as quickly as possible, and one of the nice things I think that's going to be evolving over the next few years is the use of teledermatology in some of these cases, where perhaps you may have a physician who's in clinic working with a resident who's in the hospital. They can send a photo. The resident tells you, I think this is contact dermatitis. You look at it, you agree. A plan of action is put in place, and the patient's able to go. So that is probably what we end up doing in some cases when people are not available.
It's interesting, with Massachusetts being a relatively small state with 1 million communities, but yet it is central to New England, and New England is a bunch of states. One of the problems with teledermatology is the fact that one must be licensed to render an opinion in these other states in teledermatology.
Well, I guess one of the nice things about being in medicine as compared to law is that the licensing isn't quite as complicated as retaking your bar examination in those states. And so I'm double licensed in New York and Massachusetts, but if ever there were an opportunity to help other hospitals in other New England states, I think I would be more than happy to register in those states as well. And so I think it will really depend on sort of how the scope of our practice evolves and what people envision for their career plans, but certainly in rural areas or even in community hospitals that have difficulty because they don't have a lot of dermatologists practicing in the area, or their dermatologists are just so busy managing the community that they can't make it to the hospital in a timely manner, this may be a way where the dermatology hospitalist can reach out and have a broader range of impact than originally envisioned.
You mentioned community hospitals. How can this be set up in community hospitals other than via teledermatology?
That's a great question. I think teledermatology would probably be the most efficient, but from a community standpoint, I think having an individual who really was a champion for the cause and had an interest who could potentially partner with multiple community hospitals may be the most successful way to make use of the time. And I think as we're able to show that there is a cost-effective component for hospitals to have access to a dermatologist, there may be other ways to provide funding for those individuals. certainly having an advocate on the side of the hospital, someone in the emergency room, someone in internal medicine who can triage and then touch base with the dermatology attending is helpful. And because hospitals in the community tend to have fewer beds than some of these larger academic medical centers, the volume of the consults, I think, is diminished. And so you could also see that an individual wouldn't necessarily have to alter their day-to-day practice greatly to be able to accommodate and appropriately staff those patients.
You are the hospitalist. The area within the hospital is known as the inpatient dermatologic service, or the dermatologic inpatient service, but the two are not interchangeable. One is in charge of the other. And is there any special techniques one would offer to set up such an inpatient service?
Certainly. So I think first and foremost, you need to have a department that's willing to put in the time and effort that's involved in setting these up. Certainly, the volume grows as you provide availability. I can say that at our institution, we started out at probably around 500-ish consults per year when we were working on a mixed sort of model where there were different people covering. And then 5 years later, our census is now closer to 1,200 visits a year, 12 or 1,300. And so it's one of those, if you build it, they will come kind of phenomena. And very often we provide services and we're not necessarily billing for them appropriately. And so you can generate revenue that you didn't realize existed to help support the service, but it often does require at least a small window of startup time. So having a chair and a department that's willing to support that is really important. I think the other thing that is helpful is really, again, having the volume, realizing what you're working with, and then being able to project kind of what you estimate the growth of the service could be. I think you need to have a residency program as well that recognizes the benefit of learning about inpatient and really complex medical dermatologic issues, and I think most places do. It's a great opportunity to help residents start to use more complicated therapeutics and to monitor patients for side effects and to see how quickly they work, for them to look at their biopsy results, and so it really, I think, serves a purpose in that capacity as well. But I think the other thing is proximity. You have to be available. If you're going to say that you're going to come to see a consult, you have to see it, and you have to see it quickly. And so that would be the other thing. I think it would be difficult if you were practicing in an outpatient setting that was, you know, 30 minutes away from the hospital. One of the great perks to my job is that everything is within walking distance. And so we have the MGH, the Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary, and the Shriners Burn Hospital, all within, you know, a block of each other. And so that really helps quite a bit.
In trying to put it all together, then, one needs a major city which has a medical school and then has hospitals associated with that medical school with a dermatology department, not just a division, but a department that is willing to invest the time, effort, money, all combined, the departments and the hospitals, to develop an inpatient hospital service. But additionally, would need to offer teledermatology to all surrounding areas for time economy.
I think the last point is probably a bonus, but not necessarily a requirement. I think we certainly have a lot to offer in that capacity. And all that being said, there are healthcare systems in which they, I think, recognize the importance of availability to the inpatient community. And for instance, Kaiser Permanente in San Francisco has an individual who they fund whose job it is fully just to see the inpatient dermatology issues that arise within their medical system. And so completely independent of a medical school or residence. So there's so many different ways that you can do this. Really, it's kind of an exciting time to be involved in it.
I agree. Okay, Daniela, this has been excitingly interesting and fascinating to me because I've had this interest in it over the years. Would you care to summarize or make any major points that have not been heretofore covered?
I think it provides a great service to patients. It's a great opportunity for teaching and resident education and involvement in inpatient research. And I think our collaborative efforts between institutions that have hospitalists in dermatology are really allowing us to look at outcome measures in a way that hopefully will provide some data that will help with the specialties movement forward and really confirming to the medical community and really to patients that we are indeed the experts in the treatment of disorders of the skin, hair, and nails. And so I would encourage anyone with an interest in the field to get involved or to contact us. It's the Society for Dermatology Hospitalists, and our email at the current time is dermhospitalists@gmail.com.
Daniela, I really wish to thank you for a most enthusiastic and expansive helping of our getting a better understanding of the dermatologic hospital inpatient service. Thank you again.
Thanks for your time and for the invitation. It's been great.
Dermatologic hospitalists dedicate their time to the management of patients in the inpatient and emergency room settings. Their presence within the hospital setting make hospitalist dermatologists more accessible for collaboration with the other medical specialties and able to perform consultations in a timely fashion. This results in improved patient care and decreases the overall cost of care. In the emergency room setting, hospitalist dermatologists are able to identify conditions where patients could be more effectively managed in the outpatient setting. Dr. Krasinski noted many dermatologic situations seen frequently by the hospitalists. Cellulitis is an acute infection of the dermis and subcutaneous tissue, often following trauma to the skin, presenting with erythema, pain, warmth, edema, and smooth, ill-defined borders. Cellulitis can usually be treated with oral antibiotics in the outpatient setting. Nonetheless, cellulitis remains a common cause of inpatient hospital admissions. Often, dermatology consultations are requested after a patient fails to respond to antibiotic therapy. Of the cases of presumed cellulitis for which Dr. Krasinski is consulted, about 70 to 85% ultimately end up being an alternate, often course-altering diagnosis. There are several infectious, inflammatory, and neoplastic medical diagnoses that can be difficult to distinguish from cellulitis. Venous stasis dermatitis, contact dermatitis, deep venous thrombosis, and paniculitis are among the most frequent imitators. Pruritus, burning, bilateral involvement, or extreme pain are features that make cellulitis a less likely diagnosis. Widespread morbilliform eruptions are frequently associated with telaprevir, a new hepatitis C virus serine protease inhibitor, which has been used in combination with ribavirin and pegylated interferon alpha for the treatment of chronic hepatitis C virus infection. Hepatitis C virus, or HCV, is the leading cause of liver transplantation in the United States and is associated with significant morbidity and mortality. This triple combination therapy has shown tremendous efficacy in treating a traditionally drug-resistant disease while improving the prognosis of infected individuals. According to current guidelines, telaprevir must be discontinued in patients developing severe, progressive, or unresponsive cutaneous eruptions due to patient discomfort and the possibility of progression to drug reaction with eosinophilia and systemic symptoms, or DRESS, or Stevens-Johnson syndrome / toxic epidermal necrolysis. At Massachusetts General Hospital, 8 patients who developed severe eruptions associated with telaprevir were referred to dermatology for evaluation. Treatment with antihistamines, topical corticosteroids, and thick emollients provided tolerable relief, and none of the patients had to discontinue triple therapy secondary to their widespread eruption. Collaboration between hepatologists and dermatologists in this case improved the tolerability of triple therapy treatment. In addition, dermatologists are pivotal in the diagnosis and treatment of numerous other cutaneous conditions that arise in the inpatient setting, including Stevens-Johnson syndrome, toxic epidermal necrolysis, and pyoderma gangrenosum. Hopefully, the success of the dermatology hospitalist will inspire community hospitals that currently lack access to dermatologic expertise to seek out dermatologists. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Dialogues in Dermatology. Next month, we'll have a special edition dedicated to patient safety. We have a special relationship with our patients, and our primary goal is to first do no harm, and second, to help them solve their problems. Our next edition should give us great tips on both goals. This has been Terry Cronin with Dialogues in Dermatology. It's important to love and understand the skin. So stay passionate about dermatology and keep up all the great work you're doing on behalf of your patients. Your expertise and your commitment to patient care is appreciated by your community. Have another great month.